Hi, my name is Yara and I'm the host of Life After Birth. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the Whadjuk Noongar people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. I send my respects and reverence to Whadjuk Noongar elders, past, present and emerging. On this podcast, we share stories and wisdom about the ups and downs of our mothering experiences, much like the First Nations people of Australia have done so through their storytelling for over 60,000 years. Through their oral traditions, the Whadjuk Noongar people have supported and celebrated one another and have passed down knowledge, values and lessons, providing a testament of the power and significance of sharing our own stories. In honouring them, we recognise the importance of storytelling in understanding our past, navigating our present and shaping our future. My hope is that this podcast carries this spirit forward in our conversations, acknowledging that while our stories may differ, they all hold value and contribute to our shared human experience. Hey Mama, I'm Yara Heery and this is Life After Birth. This is where you can find honest and vulnerable conversations that lift the veil on how mothers really experience life after birth. Join me as I talk to the experts in the parenting space, but not as you've heard them before. These conversations explore the common humanity in all our lived experiences as mothers, so that you're left feeling seen, heard, validated, and bolstered in your ability to weather your mothering storms. Hi, mamas, and welcome back to another episode of Life After Birth. I hope you've all had a wonderful start to your week. I have spent the last 2 weeks passing on baby clothes, prams, carriers, like frantically going through every room of my house, just trying to declutter. With both my kids are now in full-time school, which is amazing, and I've finally got the opportunity to go through each room and really cull a lot of stuff that's just been accumulating for such a long time. And I can't believe how many feelings and emotions it is that I'm experiencing as I go through this. I'm not finished yet. Yeah, it's wild. And also because obviously they're both in school. So I'm like, oh, they're past, you know, that little baby stage. And this job was one of those things that I'd really put on the back burner for a number of years in my attempt to juggle tasks. And when I say juggle, I mean to drop the plastic balls because it just wasn't an urgent one. So I had to make peace with the fact that, you know, there was just going to be a bit of clutter and, you know, that was a phase of life. And so it's nice that I'm obviously now moving into a different phase of life and it means I can have a little bit less of the stuff that I've been holding on to. Some of that was holding on just in case another little baby showed up, but I don't think that we're going to be doing that. I think we've well and truly passed that stage at this point, but it does feel so amazing to have more space in the house now, though, you know, I'm not sure how long that will last because, you know, things build up because kids. So we'll see how that goes. So this week I'm bringing such a gorgeous chat with psychologist Dr. Renee Kasia, who is also the best-selling author of the fabulous book Parenting Freedom and the founder of Inner Practice, a modern family psychology practice based in Northern Rivers in New South Wales. At the time when we recorded this, Renee was busy chasing after a very spirited 2.5-year-old girl and was expecting her baby boy in January of this year. So she would be well and truly into those early first months of a newborn now. So in this conversation, Renee shares her personal experiences with unexpected challenges, which of course we all know what that can be like. And for her, this included things like breastfeeding difficulties and adapting to her new identity as a mother. She also talks to us about her experience of juggling her professional ambitions and the responsibilities of mothering, which I'm sure many of you can relate to in terms of the kind of frustration that we feel, some level of surrender that we must accept, but also how do we forge our way into or back into any kind of professional or career-based ambitions while mothering, right? Challenging. We also talk about the importance of self-care and recognizing her own needs as a mother and how her matrescence experience has been a period of huge personal growth, self-discovery, and I love to talk about it as an evolution of her identity. I hope this episode finds you exactly where you are and that you hear exactly what you need in this moment to persevere if you're experiencing your own challenge, or that it just feels like a beautiful warm hug, or like you're a fly on the wall at a catch up. I just hope that you feel enveloped with the beautiful warmth that Renee communicates in, you know, the things that she talks about. It was such a beautiful conversation. So snuggle up or get the shoes on, go out for a walk and enjoy this episode. Hi, Renee. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. I'm so excited about having a chat with you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no worries. So before we get sort of stuck into all the questions, let us know a little bit about what your family looks like right now. So your kids and sort of who's there.
Yeah, so I have a daughter who's 2 and 3 months, so just over two. When do we stop counting the months?
Oh, I know, right?
And I live with her and my husband, and I'm also expecting, so I'm in my third trimester of expecting my second bub in January.
Oh, wow, how exciting. Congratulations for that. How are you feeling in that prep, in the lead up?
Feeling really good. Yeah, feeling really good. I think in the early stages of pregnancy and the first trimester, sort of nausea and things like that, I was like, wow, okay, we're going to go through this again. It was like, took it a few weeks to kind of get my head around that. And now I'm just like in that phase where I've kind of processed that this is happening and really excited and yeah, starting to feel like my brain winding down from work and all the things I've been really enjoying and starting to, yeah, shift into that space of like, you know, that birth space, that really slowing down.
Yes.
I'm feeling my body slow down. So that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. What a process to be in again. I have got two children who are 7 and 5. And I think I was talking to some friends. Actually, I feel like I've been talking to anyone who will listen about this lately, which is just that at that age, and now my youngest is about to go into full-time school next year for pre-primary. And I'm just like at this point of like the letting goes that happen throughout your entire mothering process. But I think this is the first huge one for me that both of my kids are now in school. And I'm just like, I'm not ready for this. And so then I start fantasizing about having children. More children and doing all sorts of things. And then there's a whole bunch of reasons why we haven't done that, obviously. So then I end up in that space of mind. But yeah, that prep when you start counting down can be a lovely time for lots of different reasons, waiting for them
yes.
to come.
Isn't that funny? We long for that time for ourselves, that space back in our days, and then you get it and then you kind of yearn back for that more hands-on.
Yeah.
Like it's like a real trip.
Yeah.
Kind of containing those two yearnings.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, totally, totally. So the question then that I want to ask you that I often start off with is, where have you come from? Who is Renee Kashia? And, you know, you can go as deep and take that however you want, because some people take that and tell me about, you know, their family of origin. Other people talk about just, I guess, where they were and how they've always thought of themselves before mothering. So, yeah, who are you? Hey mamas, it's Yara here from Life After Birth Psychology. I want to talk to you about something that many mothers carry a lot of shame about, and that's anger. Have you ever found yourself thinking, what the hell is wrong with me? Why am I so angry? Why can't I just stay calm? Well, I want you to know that you're not alone. So many mothers quietly worry about their anger. But did you know that your anger carries messages that can unlock a more regulated and fulfilling experience for you as a mother? To support you in changing your relationship with anger, I have created a self-paced online workshop designed to help you understand your anger and learn to process and express it in more adaptive and healthy ways. Within the workshop, you'll explore the role of your nervous system, the hidden messages in your emotions, and even how your past influences how you respond to challenge and stress today. But the best part, you'll gain practical tools that'll help you gracefully steer through those intense moments, all while deepening the heartfelt connections you cherish with your children and loved ones. Ready to get started? All you have to do is head to lifeafterbirthpsychology.podia.com, scroll down and click on my Why Am I So Angry workshop. You can also check out the link in the show notes for today's episode. All right, let's get back to the show.
Well, I suppose if I look back at who I was before mothering, I was somebody who was thriving. I had a lot of amazing things going on. My sort of 5 to 10 years before becoming a mother was very full. My husband and I probably spent 5 of those years together, and we just did a lot. We did a lot of fun things. We ticked a lot of boxes, did a lot of achievements. I'm from Melbourne. I grew up in Melbourne, sort of suburbs, and we packed up our bags and moved over to the States. And we've done so many different things. We've since moved interstate to the Northern Rivers. I've been a psychologist for 10 years, kind of engaged in both clinical practice and academic research-based work. So I've had a lot of amazing opportunities through doing my PhD and being flown around really the world internationally to present my research and things like that. Yeah. And so I've had a lot of amazing experiences through my profession and also personally with my husband. We've done a lot of traveling and a lot of different adventures together. He's got like a real traveling spirit. So we were thriving and we had a really great life. And I've had sort of these two sides of me where I've had this really intense interest in psychology and academia and being a practicing psychologist, and then also like on my own sort of spiritual path and being interested in meditation and sort of more contemplative practices. So I guess I was like, enjoying all of living aligned with my values, living in nature, hiking before work, having career success, you know, being able to control all parts of my life. So I guess my life as this woman before it becoming a mother was completely different to what the reality is day to day as a mom.
Yeah. It sounds like such a full life. And I'm sure that you probably still have a very full life, just different, full in different ways. And of course, I loved, you know, that mention on that word control. And I think, you know, as we continue talking, I'm sure we can explore more about that. It certainly is a theme that comes up quite a lot with people that I speak to on the podcast and certainly in my work with clients in the groups and stuff like that. Absolutely. Yeah. And tell me, and then I'm going to ask you actually, tell me a little bit about where you've come from in terms of your background and your family. And I think I like to ask that question because I think it gives us, I guess, once we start to know more about what your experience of mothering has been and what that transition phase was like for you, it gives us a little bit more context, I guess, to some of the things that you've experienced, both in positive ways and in ways that maybe were more challenging. And I think that it's a beautiful relation contact point there for people who are listening as well and maybe have similarities in terms of their family of origin that might influence how they have experienced mothering too.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of what we experience comes into our journey through motherhood, especially early motherhood. I agree. I was raised, I'm the middle of three girls. So I've got two sisters. I'm the middle child, classic middle child. And I was raised primarily by my mother, who was probably separated from my father, biological father, in like when I was about 7 or 8. And my mother was probably, it's probably most accurate to describe her as a single mother, although she did meet who was my stepfather. And we lived with him for a lot of our upbringing from like year 6 or year 7, maybe 11 or 12 until I was a young adult. So he was like a father figure and very sort of evident in my upbringing from that second stage of the later stage of childhood and adolescence. So yeah. And I guess growing up, I was like very into sport. I was pretty good at school, but pretty naturally, you know, able to achieve pretty naturally, very active and competitive. And I've always been a high achieving person. And I guess a person who's been a striver, and that has been something that has been consistent through, my life. And then going straight into university and doing all the years and, you know, all the scholarships and, you know, all the things that we do. And I think this, our field as psychologists, really attracts a lot of sort of those striving perfectionists.
Sort of. I was wondering if you're going to call that.
Personalities. Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of those things, I think, you know, being a parent and a psychologist, you know, one of the things that I think people on the outside perceive is that that makes it maybe easier to do that job because, you know, you have the education background and, you know, maybe some level of insight that people who maybe haven't studied in that field and worked in that field maybe don't have. But I also see it as a double-edged sword, which is that you know so many things as well, and it can be kind of fodder for anxiety and, you know, things like that. Like we can end up Yeah, sometimes I just think like not knowing could be easier in some ways. Like it's the healthy balance in between, isn't it? Not being too attached, I think, to all the outcomes and stuff like that and being more invested in the process, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It takes a lot of work to sort of unhook from the stories and the textbook and the theory and sort of being attuned and tuning into the practical sort of side of motherhood and parenting. And I think they're completely different skills. Like studying psychology and understanding it is completely different to the practice of motherhood. So yes, that can be really challenging. And like you said, that self-awareness piece when there is a mismatch of, yeah, I'm aware that I'm not doing that thing or I'm not meeting my own higher expectations or standards. Yeah. That can be really, really challenging for people who can normally control outcomes of, you know, achievements and things in our lives that usually we can manage variables. Yes. And as psychologists, get this idea. But in a clinical setting, it's very neat and controlled. And in our lives, it's very messy and unpredictable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're down here on the ground with everybody else, like trying to navigate and figure it all out. Absolutely. So before you were a mother and you were, I guess, thinking about being a mother and going into this journey, what did you expect from it? You know, in terms of what did you expect from the experience of being a mother itself and also in terms of who you'd be as a mother?
It's such a good question. I think I probably didn't really think past the first year. I probably did think about what my life would be like on quote unquote maternity leave and that first year and sort of having a break from work and things like that. When it came time to like, you know, I'd been in this primary role of mothering for quite some time. I had very, very little support during that phase for several reasons. And I feel like when I was ready and felt the need to start to integrate other parts of my life back in, like work and time for myself and, you know, more exercise and things like that, more balance into not just my life, my husband too, and our family, that was when I was really stuck looking at, okay, what are my values? What's important? How do I pivot? What does my life look like now? So that took a lot of energy and time and I guess like soul searching and recreating and and also looking at everything that was internalized around what it meant, what motherhood meant and what being like an attachment based parent meant and what mother I yearned to be and just sort of trying to find like, how do I still be? Because the person that I was before I was a mother was completely non-existent, I guess, in some ways, as like in terms of what I was doing day to day now. Yeah. So like, how do I integrate these two parts of my life now? Because it has to be recreated. It can't, what I was doing before is not going to work anymore. So yeah, it's like, it was a whole recreation process, which I do feel like I've found some balance now that my daughter's sort of nearly 2.5. It's all going to change again.
Yeah.
But you know, it's taken a long time to get to that point.
Yeah, like how do I feel like myself when I don't do really any of the things that the self that I recognized from before used to do? And that's one of those things, isn't it, with identity. So much of that is fueled by the everyday things that we do, the conversations that we have, the relationships we hold, how we engage within those relationships and what we do out there in the world, like what the evidence is of who we are in the world. And I think that when, we don't have opportunity to engage with those, and it's not just opportunity, but a lack of desire even to want to do that, right? Because of course, one of those things about becoming a parent is that your priorities do shift and trying to still feel connected to who you have always known yourself to be can be so challenging throughout all of that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you feel like was what was some of the early surprises for you, I guess, or I don't even know if surprises are the word, but, you know, like learnings for you, challenges for you in that first year. And I really resonate, by the way, with what you're saying there around like not really thinking far beyond maternity leave. Like I didn't even have any grasp on how long maternity leave would be. Like that's how little I actually thought into it. I had no concept. I was just like, well, I'm going on maternity leave. And I think when I ended up taking about a year off, and it was only at the end of that year that I was like, how long is this go for? Like, how long am I going to do this for? Like, when am I going to be who I used to be? Like, you know, all of those sorts of questions. So yeah, what was the things that I guess maybe did catch you off guard or that you didn't expect or didn't match up to, you know, maybe some of those expectations you may have held?
A lot. I think starting from the birth, really, like my birth didn't go to quote unquote plan. I had a really good experience and it was quite long and didn't end exactly how I had expected. And I guess I never felt like I went through birth trauma. I really felt like I maintained a sense of flexibility. And I think a lot of my work on being psychologically flexible really did show up then. And I felt that in the kind of recovery period as well. So I felt like quite proud of myself adapting to something that I probably put a lot of, even too much effort into before, you know, trying to control what my experience would be. So, but I did feel like I adapted and had the ability to process that and be quite content with that very quickly. What maybe caught me by more surprise was our breastfeeding difficulties. Mm-hmm. That, you know, nobody really talked about that much in the books or the podcast or, you know, when you're listening and you're preparing for your first child. I hadn't heard many people discuss that. That was a really, really difficult journey, early journey for us. I did end up breastfeeding for quite some time, but the first 6 weeks were really, really difficult. And I sort of wasn't even prepared. Like I was trying to work out which lactation consultants could help us in those early days. I didn't really even know that it would be handy to have a few sort of on call. So that was really difficult because it was something that you have to face every 2 hours in those early days. Like you have to just keep going. And when you're feeling like depleted and exhausted, that can be really difficult because you don't just get to have a break from it or a self-care day like you can in any other situation in life or if work's really difficult. So that was definitely an early challenge that took us by surprise. And I think like beyond that, really, it was getting to like being that sort of somebody who was probably a little bit hyper independent. And just for context, it was during the pandemic lockdowns when we gave birth. So we had family who were planning to come up interstate to be around and to support us, which they couldn't actually get into the state. We had sort of all the borders shut. So we didn't have any family support that we could call on, and things that I guess we had planned to have in place kind of was taken away. Mm-hmm. We also had like a lot of the Northern Rivers floods in New South Wales throughout this year.
Yes.
So we had a lot of different things kind of going on. At this time, my husband had some things come up around his career and professional stress and workplace things, and we had financial commitments. So we had a lot going on that some of it we hadn't planned for or predicted all at the same time when we had this little baby who, you know, was all-encompassing. We were completely besotted, in love, swept off our feet, all of those things. But, you know, you're dealing with a lot of emotion with, like, very little support. So it was sort of the combination of all the things, like that first, like a 6 to 9 months. And then I think I found myself at about 9 months where I'd been kind of grinding, doing it all, like a lot of it on my own, you know, with my husband, and he's very, very supportive. But of course he was working full time and, you know, long days at home and just feeling like completely dysregulated from like my nervous system point of view.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I think at like 9 months to 10 months, you know, at that point, not that there's any right or wrong, but by that point, you're getting really burnt out. You've been, you know, I was breastfeeding around the clock. My daughter has never really been a good sleeper from pretty early on. So, you know, it's a 24/7 thing. And then trying to work out, okay, we don't have our parents right around the corner who would be really supportive if they were. And you know, at this point, like you said, I hadn't thought about beyond the first year. So I didn't have my daughter on any list for childcare or family daycare, or I hadn't thought about nannies. Like I had not even thought about like the fact that if I want to work or have any time to myself, either my husband needs to take that time off work or I need to have something else lined up. So I think at that point I was just feeling a bit, I don't know if stuck's the right word, of just like, what am I going to do? I need to make a plan here. And at the same time of feeling like, but I need something for myself right now. Like I need something that's going to help my nervous system be more regulated. It felt completely out of whack.
Mm. And I think also so important to, you know, thinking about for context wise as well, there's all the anxiety that exists around a pandemic as well. Right. And in terms of like not knowing how long sort of lockdowns are going to go for, not knowing the full extent of what this kind of virus is and what it does and the impact it has on us. And yeah, there was so much. It almost feels like a lifetime ago in some ways to me. Like I think that I had Laura Danger on the podcast in a past episode, and she really talked about this as well and her perspective from it over in the States. And I think we really talked about it being, for many people, like an experience that could be trauma-inducing for people to have gone through that pandemic. And so when you talk about this lessening capacity, I guess, or reduced capacity on your nervous system, like absolutely becoming a parent for the first time is like an avalanche in many ways, right? Coming down on your nervous system and needing to adapt, and how important it is to have those support people around, like your family and stuff. But then you've also got this other level that is happening as well, that even without having been pregnant or had a baby at that time, there was just a general level of anxiety that was really heightened for most people, I think, during that time. I really have this memory of driving in the car and hearing about, I think it was Qantas, or yeah, I feel like it was Qantas, and there was a news report that came on the radio, and it was about how they'd, you know, they'd made a huge amount of their workforce redundant. And I just broke down in tears because it was like hearing that made it real. It was like, oh wow, like where is this going to go? Like there was a point in there where it was like we just didn't actually know when it was going to end. Like now we're sort of a bit more on the other side of that. But when we were just going through it in those early months of like March, April, May in 2020, like it was just this complete unknown and no way of knowing what was coming out the other end. So you're going through that experience and the experience of bringing new life and finding, you know, your own identity. And also for you, that meant like a reduced capacity in terms of forming community, right? Like I can only imagine, you know, the playground dates and, you know, the child health nurse places and stuff. Is that something that you experienced as well during that time?
Yeah, a little bit. It more affected my personal journey in the first 3 to 6 months, where I actually, because we live like on the border from New South Wales to Queensland, I actually birthed in Queensland and live in New South Wales. So it was more actually, it affected us in our access to services. So, you know, we couldn't actually get back to the care providers who, you know, supported me during birth. And so we were in this situation where when we needed support, we not only did we not have family around, but we also didn't have access to all of, you know, and there were times where like from my house to even Lismore Hospital, which is the New South Wales hospital, was flooded. Mm. So we couldn't get there. So there was kind of border closures. And then there were times where there was like floods where we couldn't access. So I guess at the time we were just like, okay, like adapt and problem solve. And when we did need to get to appointments or get like that practical professional support, we just had to work it out. And our community is, you know, really great. There's a lot of people around that can support, but just trying to problem solve when your executive functioning is, you know, at a very low capacity, you're extremely tired, you're dealing with new situations every day. I think that was really challenging. I think by the time it came sort of time to form community, you know, you don't really do that in the early days. Yeah. Once you're in your rhythm and you can start getting out more, I think things had opened up and normalized a little bit. So it was good in that sense. Yeah, that I could build those relationships and have a lot of beautiful friendships from that time that have continued to develop and form. But yeah, it was more early practical support where it affected my family, but it was very intense. And for mothers, I think a lot of new mothers, like there were a lot of experience of people not being able to access formula. Like, you know, people were buying everything off the shelf. Yeah. So there were, you know, mothers going through this period of time where they actually, you know, going through the trauma of not knowing if they could feed their baby. And although, like, you know, there are a lot of practical ways you could problem solve at that time, it was very intense and very real.
And especially because there was a lot of shortages at that time across a whole variety of issues. So, I mean, part of being able to problem solve is having some capacity to know what is coming in the future. And I think when we can't know that, that really limits our ability to problem solve and to think of the solutions. And I also think just the intensity of, especially in those first couple of months when your sort of hormone levels and everything are adjusting and stuff, like we're not necessarily functioning and thinking in the same way. And just the very sense of being depleted and overwhelmed really, you know, plays absolute havoc, doesn't it, on our ability to use that of executive functioning, which is, you know, the planning and the problem solving and the rationalizing and all of that sort of stuff, it can become really difficult. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Mm.
And tell me about, you know, what do you feel like? And I'm interested to know where this thing around control, and I don't know whether you really resonate with perfectionism yourself, but we talked about it in terms of maybe the type of people that, you know, tend to be attracted to the practice that we both, you know, got into. So in terms of your area of growth, what do you think that has been for you?
I think I would say that I would have the self-awareness that I tend to be on the perfectionistic side of the spectrum of humans, but it's not in a way that it impacts my life. I think I've built so much self-awareness through my journey, through, you know, my psychology work and also my own spiritual self-help endeavors. So it's not something that impacts me very much at this point, although it probably does sneak in with my like high expectations and getting a bit rigid at times and things like that. But I think what was more difficult, probably my biggest area of growth, was around being maybe hyper independent and trying to work out what are my needs? How do I get them met in this stage of my life? And I guess before you're a mother, I feel like I had the ability to meet all of my own needs myself, like most of them.
Yeah.
Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like yeah. I was very emotionally and physically and practically self-sufficient, even financially. And I guess that the shift in every single area where you become very interdependent, like I was already married, but that real shift in interdependence happened for me when we had a child, because we both lived these very full, my husband and I, very full, fulfilling lives separately and had so much fun and shared experience together. So our life was like just wonderful, you know, in the sense of like everything working harmoniously. Yeah. And so I think, of course, everything changes with your relationship and how you kind of live. How you live day to day and week to week changes. So I think learning how to exist within this framework of like, I need to speak my needs, but even before I speak them, I need to actually know what they are. So like, I have to work out what this version of me needs, because, you know, all the things that I used to do to nourish myself and keep myself well, like, you know, if I had a big day of clients in the practice, I would usually hike before work, or, you know, I could go to, you know, that yoga class whenever I wanted, or all the things that I would do to regulate my nervous system before having kids, I couldn't just do it at my fingertips.
Yes.
You know, so that was big in like, how do I, A, it was like practically scheduling my week, mm-hmm. sort of working out what actually is supporting me and helping me regulate and be, you know, what am I getting a lot back from in terms of like my use of self-care? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do I need? And then how do I arrange my life so that that need is met?
Yeah.
That's not kind of pointing to like my partner and being like, you have to meet my needs. It's like, I had to work that out for myself.
Oh, yeah. And I think that a lot of it is that, you know, a lot of the people that I work with just don't even have that concept of their own needs. And especially because the role of being a mother in our culture is often one that's around self-sacrifice. So the idea of actually getting to know and understand your own needs and then allowing them to occupy space is pretty foreign for a lot of people. And that's not by any fault of their own. It's just because it's the soup that they've been raised in, right? And I think that even then, one of the things that I have found, which is really interesting, is that even once you do start to talk about that and you do start talking about why needs are so important and why they do need to be met and why it's you're allowed as a mother to take up that space, there's still quite a number of women that I work with who sort of say, I just don't know what my needs are. Like they really struggle with that. And I think, again, it says a lot about the culture that we're in too, from a perspective of, you know, gender, in terms of that, you know, women are sort of meant to be needless because their job is actually just to care for the needs of everybody else. And so I think that even coming to a place where you go, oh shit, I have needs and they're important. And now I'm going to go on this journey to discover what that really means. That's a huge undertaking for so many people, but so important and so very meaningful as well to living a mothering experience that feels fulfilling for us rather than just full of self-sacrifice.
Yeah, definitely. And I just felt like there was no way for, I think there was like this unconscious expectation of like, I can be myself with this, like, I'm going to change my whole life. I'm going to stop working. I'm, you know, going to stop engaging a lot of my passions and self-care. I'm going to focus fully on this little person and then show up as this same passionate, thriving version of myself. And then, you know, 9 to 12 months postpartum, looking in the mirror and being like, okay, this is, you know, not sustainable. There is an element of like, there is a period where, you know, it's difficult to tick all these boxes, but it was about the reintegration of like, how am I going to recreate a new version of these things and not be the needless woman. And I think there was those words specifically pop up in my mind all the time about the needless woman. And, you know, you see it left, right and center, and it's so internalized in our culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, it affects our well-being so much.
I often, in the group that I run and with women that I work with, I often talk to them about sort of the hierarchy of needs, which is obviously based off Maslow's work. And I love it because it allows for phases in our parenting where there are certain kind of higher level needs that we cannot be in touch with. And I think that's kind of what you were talking about there, especially in that newborn phase where there is just a lot of need on us in terms of for the survival of this little baby, and not just the survival, but also because they're adapting to being in the outside world, which may mean that sleep is much less kind of predictable than it gets as they get older, and certainly into sort of toddler years and things like that. And within that sort of hierarchy of needs, we've got like the basic needs at the bottom, which are, you know, eating nutritious food, getting rest. And I like to talk about it as rest, not just sleep, because sleep is so contentious at that time. And depending on what your baby's like and what the immediate needs are at that time, that can really vary what sleep looks like. So I talk about it as rest and then movement. And I think a basic need is always around safety, right? Having actual physical safety, emotional safety in your space. And I love that model because it means that when you're in the newborn phase, you get to just like, just focus here. This is where we're at. And then as they start to get, you know, tiny little bits of independence more and your world starts to open up more, then you can look at things like the social connections and, you know, moving your way back to like self-actualization and, you know, things like that. But yeah, and I also think it's just so important when we talk about needs to think about it in a really basic way as well. So often, you know, I feel like self-care comes into this idea of needs, which it is. I mean, that's what we're doing. But I love to think about it even on a deeper level than that. You know, I do a lot of parts work. So I love to think about it as like, you know, how do we mother the mother? And how do you re-mother yourself? And how do we re-mother the parts within us that are showing up and are really vulnerable and needing care? And so, you know, a really simple way that I love to share with people is like just simply checking in with our bodies throughout the day can be a really effective way to get attuned with what our needs are on a very basic level. Like, I need to go to the toilet. I'm feeling tired. I need to sit down. When I do that at the moment, I often think I need to lay on the floor with my legs on the wall because I get some, you know, sort of back pain and that always relieves it. But I would just push through and push through and push through, and becoming really attuned to my body in the day to day means I get to notice mundane things like that and I get to do something about it. And that's a meeting of a need. That's actually, you know, and so I love also to sort of really break it down in that sense. Like, it's not about, you know, the glam spa days and, you know, things like that. It's like real basic, like making sure you go to the toilet when you feel that you need to, instead of holding onto it for hours, or getting a drink of water when you notice that you're thirsty. Those are the really small things, I think, that right from the beginning allow us to feel like we're taking up space and it's not just everybody else's needs.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree. I practice those things as well. They're very basic. Well, things that seem basic, but they're actually not, because if I don't eat a proper lunch, or if I haven't like prepared food for myself, then by the end of the day, if I'm more reactive to my family, well, that seems like a small thing, but it's actually not.
No, I so agree.
I'm running off coffee and adrenaline. Yep,
absolutely. Absolutely. And I'd love to know, you know, how has your journey kind of influenced your work? So I know you've got your book that you wrote, right? Parenting Freedom. So tell me a little bit about what that has been like for you, that journey, because obviously you had a pretty kind of prolific working culture and career, I guess, leading into that. How did becoming a mother influence that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I did work with parents, and I have worked with children and the parent-child interaction for really 10 years now. So way before I had children of my own. And I think, you know, it's funny because a lot of the things that are even in my book, which I wrote before I was a mother, I still like, I completely agree with them intellectually. And that's been refreshing because I was a bit nervous. A few people were like, you might change your mind. And I was like, if anything, I feel more confident in like writing about things like the parent-child nervous system. And that was the way that I sort of focused and practiced around supporting the parents before I was a mother. So I think I'm proud of that now because I'm like, I could see that before I experienced it. And now that I've experienced it, even more so. Yeah. So I guess like becoming a mother, it just, there is depth in your experience that you just can't get at, or you can't grasp before you've experienced it and had the lived experience. I think what I've felt in me is how much we have working almost against us at times as mothers. And that's not in like a victimhood. Yeah. I don't say that from a victimhood sort of way, but I say that in like a systemic way. Oh, yeah. That it's really hard. Like I was literally just saying to my osteo last week, like I am so aware of, you know, taking care of myself. I'm really into my yoga practice. I've got all these things. I've got a supportive partner. I've got all of my needs are met. And still, I'm still,
yeah.
You know, feel like, you know, I'm sometimes just like treading water. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, how do we, if we don't have these structures and supports in place, we don't have a supportive partner, we don't have stability and our need, you know, our basic needs aren't met, let alone our self-actualized needs. How do we respond in an attuned way to our child? How do we sort of put attachment front of center of our mind when we're talking about how we're managing our child's behavior or their anxiety?
It's
so
hard.
I think, yeah, it's like, I think that depth from a point of really addressing the, I've become more passionate about the environmental factors,
yes,
that are around a whole family and the system.
Yeah.
Than I was before. I was probably a little bit more focused on the child and the parent relationship. And now it's like stepping back even more.
Yeah, zooming out and seeing more of what influences that end. Because, I mean, that's kind of like, that's the end in a way. Like not the end, but as in like that's the result of, you know, everything else that's happening in the background, which is, of course, like whatever the parent's bringing with them into mothering, which is, you know, their family of origin, their experiences, their belief systems, you know, the imprinting on their nervous system. But then you've also got that whole part, which is that socio-cultural influence and, you know, the fact that we live in a patriarchal system and what that means for mothers and how they're valued and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I think what I mean, I agree and I really practice in that way too and really try to empower mothers to see that perspective. And, you know, we've just finished up another round of the rebirth recently and hearing the feedback from the women who are going like, oh, I just feel like I've just let myself off the hook, like all of a sudden, because there's this awareness now for so many of them that, yeah, okay, I've got this stuff that I've got, which is, you know, we've addressed that and not dealt with it, but, you know, provided resources and tools to work with that. But also, shit, I hadn't realized how much of this stuff is actually out of my control. And then I have to do the best that I can to work within that, right? And that's really, that's hard work. And then that gets even harder if you're from a marginalized group, right? So it's so important actually to, and I think that the culture that we live in is a culture which says you can do this X, Y, and Z if you work real hard and if you don't give up and all of this kind of crap, and it's just rubbish, right? Like, I mean, like, of course those are wonderful parts of a personality to have to achieve goals, but that's not the only thing that plays a role here. It's also to do with, yeah, like your kind of, you know, what group you are part of and how culture responds to that. And I mean that in terms of whether you're a mother or not, but also other groups that you may belong to after being a mother as well, like as well as being a mother. So, and I think that when we are able to see that, we get so much self-compassion, actually, you know, like we can see even when we respond in ways that don't feel good or aligned, we can look at that later on or we can reflect on it and say, okay, well, this is how I might want to do this next time better. But also let's have a look at all the stuff in the backpack. You know what I mean? Like all the stuff that we're carrying, and then we can have some self-compassion because it's not all us. You know what I mean?
Definitely, yeah.
And I think that that's so incredibly powerful. I'm a really firm believer of that self-compassion is the most important and underrated thing that we all need to access healing. And I mean that not even just as mothers, but in general, like when we have self-compassion for ourselves, when we can hold all the parts of ourselves, even the parts that we don't like and all the rest of it, we have then got self-compassion for other people and all their parts and all that sort of stuff. So that's such a big thing for me. It's so underrated, but I do feel like having that, the bigger view of everything allows us to really pull on that self-compassion maybe more effectively.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think self-compassion has probably been my most consistent practice since I gave birth, really, of like in this moment, like, yeah, you know, from the early breastfeeding to the tantrum toddlers in the supermarket when somebody's like looking at you if you're going to, you know, control your quiet your child down, you know, you will use it forever. And I think I remember somebody recently said that when they became a mother, they felt like they were constantly being watched. And there is a feeling of that. And like you were just, and you were just explaining all of these complexities to the systemic factors that don't get looked at when we're being policed or looked at from societal and people's projections and external. So I think being able to hold multiple perspectives within yourself and still practice self-compassion. So it's like being aware of your own stuff, your own control mechanisms, your own, you know, yearning to please other people and be accepted and experience validation, while also being able to, you know, recognize what's not your stuff and what's systemic. And, you know, it's complex. So I think such a simple practice can be used to respond to such complex sort of things that are going on around us that most people probably are not even aware of. So this is why you feel rage. This is why you, you know, just cannot control your emotions. It's not your fault.
Yeah. Do you have, you know, I'm putting you on the spot with this, but do you have anything that is like an in the moment quick tool or even like a mantra or something that you say to yourself that helps you generate self-compassion when you're, you know, going through something that feels really hard in your parenting?
I think, I don't know that I use this phrase, but like the phrase of like this too shall pass. I think the longer that I've been a parent for almost 2.5 years, I think you really can lean into the fact that everything is a phase. And, you know, having a sick child or a few really difficult days where you feel like your child is never going to stop whinging at you or something, you know, and you're just feeling that blood boil under your skin, being able to know that like tomorrow that child could wake up the sweetest, most delicious version of themselves. Yeah. And I think, you know, over the years you go through enough of those phases. So I try to personally, when I'm feeling like at that heightened point, just recognizing I need to tap out, I need to go and have a shower, I need to, like, sometimes it's really simple, I need to just leave the room for a few minutes and just regulate. And secondly, I cognitively then try to just remind myself that it's just this moment, it's just this day, it's just, you know, and things pass so quickly, and then you're almost like having the most magical experience two hours later, right?
Yes. Oh my god, yeah. And I think that for me, as I was sort of saying earlier on, the experience of feels like, like I said, a really big letting go now with both of my kids moving into full-time school, which there are some real benefits that obviously, like, it's exciting to think about the more time and capacity that I have available to do other things as well and to feel more rested in general, so that I do feel hopefully less of that burnout and that sort of thing and depletion and frustration that you can feel when you have, you know, long periods of time parenting young kids. But certainly at the point where I'm at, and I would say for, you know, some of the guests that I've spoken to who've got kids in their teens and in their 20s, that concept of this too shall pass almost feels too fast, you know, like, but it's so difficult when you're in that. And especially I think in those first couple of years, that time can feel like it just goes forever. Like it feels such a long time. I remember having some pieces of paper on my son's room that had that exact saying on it, you know, and there was another one about the nights are long, but the days are short, or something like that, you know? And I put them on there to try and help me have perspective when I was going in for another session of settling or, you know, whatever it was during the night, so that I would be able to have some self-compassion for what was happening in that moment. So I think that's lovely to remember that this too shall pass. Absolutely. And one actually want to mention as well, because I've talked about this in the podcast and in some content before, often about making sense of children's behavior when it's hard and we're trying to generate compassion for when their behavior feels really hard and challenging. But actually in the last couple of weeks, even months now, I've really been using this little mantra on myself, which is just, what's my most generous interpretation? And I've been finding that to be really helpful, even in my own, you know, when I'm thinking about things I've done. And actually a lot of it has been, I feel like I'm not the only one, because I hear this from other mothers as well, that experience that we may often have where we're up at night before we go to bed and we're like running through all the things that have happened in the day, and we can really generate some really powerful anxiety from doing that. And for me, it's not even just about what's happened in the day, like stuff from like years ago will pop up in my head, you know? And I have found that mantra to be so useful for that, because when I say, what's my most generous interpretation, it's like all of a sudden, it's like I give myself permission to zoom out and see the whole picture rather than just the one incident or that one interaction or the one reaction. And so, yeah, I just wanted to share that in case that might be helpful for anyone else like me who does the late night, you know, going back through the memories of the filing system, things we haven't got quite right.
Yeah.
You know, so that can be, yeah, really helpful too.
Something that you just made me think of then was that something that I do use with my daughter, who I have recently realized has a mini nervous system that mimics mine.
Of course.
So yeah, obviously the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right? But in those moments of that real frustration, I've been really tuning into like, what would I, you know, if I was having an adult-like version of this experience, what would I need, or even a child version of myself? And like, it sounds really simple, but it can just bring that perspective really quickly of like, if somebody was responding to me the way that I'm responding to my child, how would that feel? And you can just get that really quick shifting perspective.
I feel like even as you were saying that, I could just feel the softening in my body even as you were talking that through. And I feel like there's a real element of that that feels like reparenting, right? Because for me, when I do that, I'm almost always brought back to me as a child needing whatever that need was. So needing attention or needing reassurance or whatever it is. And it's like, you know, in some of those instances, I didn't receive that. And so it's like, oh shit. Yeah, I know what that feels like, you know? And so being able to come back into the here and now with a softness that maybe I didn't have before, if I didn't bring that into my mind. Yeah, it's really powerful. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I'd love to know, with the experience that you've had, and maybe I should start sending this question out to people in advance so they can have more time to think about all of their, you know, the experience and the wisdom that they've got that they bring. But what would you most like to impart on mothers who are listening today?
That's a really good question. I think really to sum up, like we sort of touched on it with self-compassion, but it is that there are periods where you really want to hold yourself tenderly. I think that especially when you're going through it for the first time, of course, like, you know, when you're going through it subsequent times, there'll still be different challenges and overwhelm and overstimulation. But I think that especially for newer mothers to really lean into that tenderness and allowing yourself to go through that journey that we sort of describe as matrescence, or, you know, we don't even have to put a word to it. But I think, yeah, allowing yourself to form what I sort of describe as like your own filter. So when, you know, we do talk about like mothers get a lot of unsolicited advice or a lot of advice, even if we're seeking it out, you know, if we're having practical difficulties like sleeping or feeding, we're, you know, just bombarded by Google and podcasts and there's too much information. So I think it takes time to really hone your own filter of like, what are my values, and to be really clear and embodied and integrated in there. So allow yourself to form that. Whenever you get advice or you feel a projection or you feel pressure, allow it to come through your own authentic filter, your own values before you take it on, and then decide if you want to sort of adopt it or adapt it or listen to it. So you're still able to be flexible and to learn and be teachable and to learn from your experiences and get unstuck when something's not working. But you also can develop this internal strength that isn't sort of shakable from little things that I think you do develop as a mother, but it sometimes takes time.
Absolutely. Oh, that's powerful. Yeah. It makes me think about that concept of being kind of self-led, you know, in kind of the parts work that I do. That's something that we talk about generally speaking, but I think especially in the mothering space, it can be such an asset to be self-led, because there is so much influence, as you said, on how to be the right kind of mother, that if we can become self-led, it means we can really pull ourselves away from kind of social conditioning and really then start to align more with what feels really good for us and what feels in alignment for what we want for our family and for our children. Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And just to finish off, I've got a couple of rapid fire questions, which sometimes overlap with the content around being a mother. Sometimes they're just completely unrelated. So that's all good. So what are you listening to at this moment in your life? And that could be in terms of music or podcasts.
Music, I tend to find that I just, if I have space to put music on, I'm just putting on like music with no words, like yoga music or something relaxing that's like, you know, regulating. I find that my daughter, if she's around, she'll just sort of play to it. It just helps her get into a little self-directed play and regulates everyone. So that's nice. Podcasts, I feel I have been a bit of an addict in the past, so I'm very selective these days with limited time. But I've been really enjoying a therapist, an American therapist called Dr. Diana Hill. Have you ever listened to her podcast?
No, I don't think so. What's it called?
Your Life in Process.
Your Life in Process, okay.
Yeah, she's an ACT therapist and trainer.
Oh, awesome.
And she's very talented and has some great sort of real plays and integrates her work with integrative wisdom. So it's sort of all the things that I'm really passionate about, and she's a really excellent teacher and trainer. Yeah. So I've been really enjoying her podcast from a geeking out point of view.
I know. And you know what's so funny? I feel like that's all the content that I listen to. So I'm like a massive Audible obsesso. So I've got like literally 7 books on the go, and they all do get read, but I will be like one chapter of this one, then one chapter of that one. Like I'm really like that. Or other times I'll have something and I just binge it. Like at the moment I'm sort of halfway through Clementine Ford's new book. So I'm like binging that, because when I'm really into something, I'm like, I'm just going to go all out. But yeah, I think since audiobooks became a thing, it's just been like, I'm unstoppable. It's the step I can listen to them anywhere I go. But I do often sort of think to myself, like, you should listen to some other stuff that is, you know, more fiction based or whatever. But I just find I can't get into it in the same way. I have just such an intense passion for this stuff that I'm just like, I really enjoy actually listening to it. So anyway, that's me. And it's good to know it's not just me, actually. You're in there too in terms of nerding out. So
I am with you. It's almost embarrassing. Like almost like next to my bed is like textbooks, like sort of psychology sort of books, the technical podcasts, and the content that nobody, like there's content that other people would enjoy in terms of like the more self-helpy ones, but there are some that are just total geek out books.
Yeah, I get it. Totally, totally. And what is the last TV show that you binged on?
Oh, what's the last one? We have been going through a phase of like English football, soccer shows. So we watched like with Ted Lasso, then it went to the Beckham one, and now we've started watching Wrexham, the one with the Ryan Reynolds one, which is a little boring, but it's been like very light watching.
On it took me ages to realize the Beckham one was out, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I felt sad for him. I felt quite sad. I don't know if you felt the same thing. It really just made me think about how difficult it must be for people who are like professional athletes when they get to a point where they can't be a professional athlete anymore, and how they find purpose and meaning in their life after that. I certainly started to have, I guess, my own sort of reflections on that and the challenges of that. Like I've always thought that must be so difficult for people in that space. But it was really interesting for me. I mean, I was quite young when he was, you know, pretty in. Like I knew him in terms of like I probably had a massive crush on him, but that's all I knew about him. So it was really interesting to learn. Yeah, it was just interesting to learn more about him. An interesting couple. So, What about, so we did talk a bit about books. What's the book, I want to say memorable. It could be memorable, or it could be, you know, your most influential book that you've read.
That is such a hard question, because I've read so many books. I'm a book hoarder. I've got all the books. I think like one of the most probably memorable books, probably Brené Brown's like classics, or I always think of Untamed by Glennon Doyle when it comes to like women and feminist sort of topics. But I tend to read such a range of books, and almost from different schools of thought, so that I can kind of make up my own mind about something. Yeah. But yeah, usually they're around the topics of psychology or self-help or spirituality, usually. I would say that Brené Brown is like a nice sort of balance of all of those three, right?
Yeah, I'm so in. I feel like every time I read or slash listen to a book of hers, it just ends up like however many hours that book is on audible crying session. Like, I don't know what it is about her stuff, but it just gets me so good. And I just have the most incredible, emotional releases listening to her. She just has this beautiful, nurturing, motherly kind of energy to me. That's the way I perceive her. Everyone can have different thoughts on that, but that's the vibe I get from her. So it just feels like the most beautiful, warm hug. And of course, her really, you know, the one that's probably best known is The Gift of Imperfection. Absolutely brilliant. So if you're out there and you haven't listened to it, I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast, check it out. It will change your world, I think, to listen to that. Thank you so much. It's just been such a pleasure to connect with you here on the podcast. It's been so wonderful. Where can listeners find out more about you?
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a privilege. Listeners can come and find me over on my website, innerpractice.com.au, or my handle on Instagram is innerpractice by Renee. I had to think about that because I've changed from practice. I had a few different accounts and I've merged them all for simplicity, partly because of motherhood. So innerpractice.com.au or innerpractice by Renee.
Yeah, I get that so much. And I will make sure to put those in the show notes as well for people who are listening. Thank you so much, lovely. It's been a pleasure and all the best in the lead up to your next little one coming Earthside. Have a wonderful lead up to that.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining me, Mama. If you enjoyed this episode, I would just love for you to leave me a review and follow or subscribe to be notified when the next episode drops. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me over at Instagram, where my handle is at lifeafterbirthpsychology. And you can find out more about how I can support you on your mothering journey at my website, www.lifeafterbirth.com.au. See you back here soon for our next chat.